by the end of this sermon series, you're going to have that song in your head, even in your sleep. It's a great song. So we are continuing our sermon series on the four loves, so the biblical loves that we find. And we have a wonderful guest preacher today. Her name is Lori Short. And we are, I said this last time, I'm just really surprised she's never been here before, because we have a lot of paths that have crossed in the Presbyterian world. Lori used to be a youth pastor up at First Press Berkeley many years ago, and she got to work with Earl Palmer and Mark Laberton, some very famous Presbyterian pastors who are wonderful. But then from there, she went into youth specialties and has been a speaker at many conferences, many places. My husband has heard her speak at conferences, and it's just interesting how our worlds have intertwined. And of course, she knows Megan Hutchinson from Youth Specialties. She has many books and online videos that you'll hear more about, but we're just really excited to hear from her. She's here today to speak on the love Eros, and so we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say, Lori. So welcome.
So basically, I'm 100 years old, now that you've heard my resume. I actually have been to this church when I was a youth pastor in Berkeley. We had a tradition every year when I would take the kids to Mexicali. Maybe some of you remember that ministry that happened down in Mexico with high school students. And we would always come from Berkeley and spend the night here at St. Andrew's before we would go down to Mexicali. So I know the ins and outs of this church pretty well, because our kids got into them. But I am just thrilled to be here and be a part of this series. And I want to commend you if you came today and you're in a season where you're either in unwanted singleness, it's been going on a lot longer than you wanted, or maybe you just went through a breakup, or you're in a season of heartbreak and you're thinking, ah, this whole weekend bugs me, let alone coming to church and hearing more about love. But I know that you've been in a series on love, and so I get the privilege this morning of speaking about the hot love, Eros love. But I want to tell you that I think what happens to us in church is we have a tendency to project onto other people the story we think they're living with their life based on the short amount of time that we see them. And so I can remember doing this when I was single for so many years, and I would come to church and I would see these families and they'd have their little cute kids and they were all dressed up, and I'd be like, oh Lord, I wish I could be like them. And what I know now after getting married and raising a child is that they were looking at me being single and footloose and fancy free and going, Lord, what I wouldn't give to have one day like her. And I think we do that to each other. Unfortunately, we do that to each other at church, the very place where we need to bring our story in and feel like we can be real with each other. And so in that spirit, as I speak on Eros, if you meet my hunk of a husband out at the book table, you might project onto me a story that you think I have lived. And just to let you know, I got married at the ripe young age of 49 years old, which is every girl's dream for their life. And when I speak at colleges, which I do quite often, you can actually, when I share my testimony, I say, and I finally got married at 49, you can see the girls go to prayer. No, God, please, no. So this has been my story, and I lived down here just south of you for quite a number of years. After I was a youth pastor at Berkeley, I came down here. My mom was living in Laguna Beach, and so I got an apartment down there, and during that time, I was dating a pastor that everybody thought I was going to marry. Actually, his sister was a national speaker. She had set us up. It was a long-distance relationship, and so we would visit each other, and he was down here one time when, unfortunately, it was so tragic, his best friend, who we had double dated with, he and his wife, had dropped dead of a brain aneurysm in the park, literally, just eating lunch. And they had two small girls. It was just a tragic story. And so we cried all night, and I put him on a plane. And to make a long story short, That was the last time I ever saw him because he comforted her so well, he ended up marrying her. And it was an amazing story in that church, literally. They talk about it, but they don't realize that the pastor was actually dating someone when this began, and that was me. Several years later, I finally got engaged, and I want to tell you something. Some of my family's here, my extended family, they will remember going to shower after shower. My mom had them all. She was so excited that I was finally getting married. I think I got every gift on my registry. I'm not kidding. And I bought my wedding dress at a bridal shop right down here in Orange County, and I had my bridesmaids' dresses. And then just a couple of months short of my wedding, my fiancé got deployed. He was a Marine reservist, and so he got deployed. He was going to be gone 9 months, and we thought, gosh, well, we've waited this long. We can wait another 9 months. And unbeknownst to me, in the course of his deployment, his ex-wife, who had left him, began having second thoughts about their relationship. And so she was writing to him. And when he came home, we broke up, and he remarried his ex-wife. Which I want to be clear to say is a great story if you're not the girl engaged to the guy. And I like to share that, you know, people, well-meaning people, would come to me and say, well, isn't it great that God used you to bring them back together? Which essentially he did. And I always like to say, you know, it's fabulous, and I hope you have the same opportunity someday. So, lest you look at me and think a story that isn't true, I know I'm sitting here looking at all of you, and you bring your stories into this place. Your stories of heartbreak and joy when it comes to love. There was a happy ending to this story, and I want to show you a photo that was taken on my wedding day. But what you need to know, two things about this photo. First, you'll notice the butterfly in my bouquet, which was very symbolic to me, to know that when we come to an end, God always has a new beginning. I always say, if you got up this morning and you're still breathing, God isn't through with your story. And boy, did I live that again and again. So I had to have that butterfly in my bouquet of the newness that God can bring. But what you also need to know is that was the dress that I bought for fiancé number one. Yes, that dress was purchased in Orange County, and my mother, God bless her, kept that dress in her closet as her hope chest. I'm not kidding. She had a humidifier on it. She used to bring my little niece in there. That's Auntie Lolo's dress. Oh, she was my flower girl in the wedding. I had the right dress. I just had the wrong guy. So I just got it a little out of order. But this picture is of my dear husband, and you can meet him after the service. We'll both be at the table, and I'd love to meet you afterwards. But we all go through a lot when it comes to love. And I will tell you that a lot of that has to do with the love that we're talking about this morning, which is Eros love. Eros love, I define it this way. I love you for the way you make me feel. Some of you know the Michael Jackson song. It feels so powerful. And in so many ways, it masquerades as the deepest love we can experience. But as we're going to talk about today, Eros can also really screw up our life if we let it run our life. I was going to title my sermon, How Not to Let Eros Screw Up Your Life, but I didn't know if anyone would come. So I want to talk about that today, is just how we can enjoy this powerful feeling of Eros without letting it be the love that undergirds the way we love. And I know your pastor is talking about all four of these loves, and you're getting a little bit of a Greek lesson through this sermon series. And last week he talked about the familial love, and today we talk about Eros, and what's interesting is my husband and I were in Corinth last summer. We got a chance to go to Greece and Croatia, and while I was in Corinth, I noticed that every single gift store had these statues of Aphrodite, and you can still see in Corinth how they worship this goddess of love, of Eros love. And they even had temple prostitutes. It was part of their worship experience. So you can see why Paul came around to talk about love to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 13 to say, this is the kind of love you need under this love that you're celebrating. That's agape love. Now, I have another way that I like to define eros, and it's with this picture right here. This picture is my eros, and it's actually my husband who did some modeling in his early years before we ended up getting married. And I always loved to imagine God in all my heartbreak and all the times that I was going through these breakups. This is what he was seeing and knowing what was going to happen. And so you never know what God has in mind. Let this bring you hope, this picture of this hunk of a man, to the answer of prayer that God may have for you. You just don't know it yet. But eros love. I want to quote C.S. Lewis just because your pastor's been going through this book, The Four Loves. I love that book, and I pulled it out of my library so I could see what this genius had to say about eros love. Some of you who know Earl Palmer, who's passed away, was the pastor of First Press Berkeley when I went up there. He was a huge Lewis fan, and he got me to really appreciate C.S. Lewis. But one of the things C.S. Lewis says is, eros is the state which we call being in love, or if you prefer, the kind of love which lovers are in. He has another quote that I'm going to put up on the screen that's going to lead us into some of these things I want to warn you about eros. He says this, "It is in the grandeur of eros that the seeds of danger are concealed." So I want to talk about some of those dangers and hopefully help you avoid some of those as you think through eros love in your life. No matter if you're single, in heartbreak, married, wherever you are in this journey, I'm really hoping that today's sermon will be an encouragement to you and informative to you in your future relationships. So the first thing is that eros seems selfless, but it's really self-centered. You are willing to do anything for this person as long as you feel the eros love for this person. As soon as you don't feel it anymore, it's amazing how selfish you get, because this kind of love, eros love, is I love you for the way you make me feel. And that's very different from the kind of love that God wants us to have for one another. The second thing is that eros is temporary, but it feels eternal when you're in it. You feel like you are always going to feel this way for this person. It is so overwhelming, so big. I will tell you that my entire high school experience was around eros love. I think I had about 6 boyfriends in 1 year. I'm not kidding. My average length of relationship was 3 weeks, because when eros was gone, it was over. There was nothing else. But there is a silver lining to that, and that is I met the Lord through one of my boyfriends, honestly. It was an intense 3-week relationship that I had, and it was going to be his birthday during the time we were dating. And so just to give you a sense of my spirituality, I said, I want to give you a keg party at my house. And he said, well, you know what, I promised my Young Life leader that I would go to this camp up in Forest Home. And I said, well, then of course I'm going with you. I mean, we're practically married. So he agreed. And we were that couple in the back of the bus making out. I had no idea where I was going. And some of you have been to Forest Home. It's a beautiful Christian conference center. And we got up there, and something happened to me that weekend that lasted the rest of my life. So never underestimate the motivation that can get you where you're supposed to be, where God is going to speak to you. And so I got there, and I don't even remember the speaker's name, but He just spoke about this God that I could have a relationship with. And just to give you a little sense of my background, I grew up Serbian Orthodox. I was baptized as an infant. My my grandparents, well, my grandfather in particular was an immigrant, came over at 19 years old with a dollar in his pocket, knew no English. They ended up, he and my grandmother started several Serbian Orthodox churches, so I grew up with this great, wonderful Christian tradition. I always believed in God, but I didn't know I could have a relationship with this God. And so there at that Young Life camp, my senior year in high school, I heard for the first time about this God that all I had to do was open my heart and he would come in and do life with me. And so I knew that I wanted that in my life. And so I stood up at that camp. I remember I made this girl stand up with me. She was already a Christian, but I was like, you need to become a Christian again and stand up with me. I was, you know, it was so out of my experience to do this. And you'll be sad to know that my boyfriend and I broke up the week after that, but Jesus and I have been together ever since that day. So that is, yeah, that we can applaud on all of our lives. But, you know, that is this feeling like when you're in Eros, it feels like forever, but we all know that it doesn't last forever, that feeling. And the third thing is that Eros masks as committed, but it's actually very fickle. You're completely devoted when you're in it, and then you're completely repelled when you're out of it. Suddenly, the same person that you were in love with bugs you to death. And because the relationship is based on Eros, there's nothing else for you to stay with. And that's what we're going to talk about. How to undergird these powerful feelings with a love that can last whatever Eros does. Because it's going to come and go throughout your whole life. And then the third thing is, or the last thing I should say, is that Eros is unstable because your feelings are running the show. Did you know that that's why movies end when the relationship is just beginning? Have you ever noticed that? The credits come up as the two find each other. And then you project and imagine that they're going to be in that state for the rest of their lives. And what's wrong with my relationship? It's not like that. I know I'm treading on thin ice, no pun intended, but Titanic. Let's just talk about that movie for a minute, Jack and Rose. How long do you think those two would actually last together, given their backgrounds? They were so different, if you haven't seen it. One was came from one place and one came from another, and they fell madly in love and were all rooting for them. But I always like to imagine the counseling that they would have had to get into in order to make their relationship last. But see, you're not going to see that because that's where the movie ends. It ends when the relationship begins. So how do we enjoy Eros without letting it run our lives? I want to offer four tips because the good news about Eros is that it's not over when it's over. It can come back as quickly as it left. And those of you who are married, if you've been married longer than 1 year, you know that. Because every one of us who have been married have fallen out of love with our spouse. Can I even say that up here? But what carries you through is the agape love, the love that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13. And then as you wait in these other forms of love, Eros comes back. It's why I can go to sleep next to my husband feeling like he's my buddy and my best friend, and then wake up the next day and he's wearing a certain shirt and all of a sudden Eros comes back. So you can be encouraged that that's going to happen in your relationship. You just can't base your decisions on what Eros is driving you to do. And that's what we're going to talk about. Four tips that I hope will help you. You know, your pastor has given a definition of love that he's working with in this sermon series, and I think it's so good, that to love is to will and work for the good of someone else. It's putting the other person ahead of yourself. So that is going to definitely put boundaries on how you act with Eros love. The first thing that I'd like to say is don't start something right away when it comes. Don't start something right away. That's what Eros drives you to do. You know, we have a boy that I've raised. He came with a package of my husband, and was 6 years old when we married, and now he's grown, and he's experiencing relationships, and I just love to watch him the first day or a couple of days when he's in a relationship. I mean, it's all he wants to do. He might talk to them all day on the phone, and I remember that so well. That's what happens. You rush in. Eros is in such a hurry because you're driven by this passion. I've got to be with this person all the time. I just want to talk to them. I want to message them. I want to be with them. I want to have them. But when you act quickly, some of you have probably had this experience, you make commitments that you can't necessarily keep. How many of you have had the experience of falling head over heels for someone? Maybe you saw them or you just knew them a little bit and they were just so attractive to you. And then as you got to know them, they slowly but surely became less attractive. Now, you don't have to say their name, but raise your hand if you've had that experience. Okay. Now, conversely, how many of you have had the experience of not really finding someone that attractive? Maybe a little bit, but nothing that blew you away. But as you got to know the person, they became more and more either beautiful or handsome to you. Have you ever had that experience? And why? It's because what's real about us is what's inside. I mean, after being married for 15 years with my husband, I barely see him anymore. Sometimes I'm shocked at how handsome he is, you know, because we see what's inside of each other. That's what comes out. And that's why Paul begins his dissertation on love, how to love, in 1 Corinthians 13 with love is patient. Good. Patient. Why would Paul say that? Because he wants us to slow down. Yes, we're supposed to exercise patience with each other, but think about it. If you act patiently in love, you're going to make a lot better decisions because you're going to really get to know the person, and then you'll be able to sustain that commitment with the agape love. So don't start something right away when it comes. Doesn't mean don't start something ever. Just don't start something right away. Enjoy it, but sit with it for a while and get to know the person. Secondly, don't leave something when it leaves. Now, maybe I'm speaking a little bit to married people at this point, but here's what tends to happen when Eros leaves your relationship. You know, you've settled into this wonderful, comfortable relationship, and even though you were so head over heels, you know, it's a lot more mellow, and suddenly you're walking along and somebody else catches your eye. And you think, oh no, I've married the wrong person. That is the person I'm supposed to be with. See, this is why Eros is dangerous. Because if you follow Eros, you might leave the very relationship you're supposed to be in to chase something that eventually is going to feel the same way as the relationship you left. That's why you can't let Eros run the show, because every time, every relationship, it eventually mellows out. But as I said, the good news is it comes back. So you know that if you've ever felt it before, it will come back. But that's why you should never leave something just because Eros leaves. Again, time. Paul says this, love is not self-seeking. When you are chasing what makes you feel good, you are at the center of your love. Instead of putting God at the center and loving someone and putting them ahead of yourself, it's more of a decision love. Agape love says, I love you no matter how I feel. It's a commitment that we make, that we can only make, really, with God's love inside of us. The third thing is, don't act on it when it leads you astray. I talked about that. It's a sad state of affairs when Eros is running your life. you will probably have multiple partners throughout your life and never actually find that kind of love that can fulfill you so much more deeply because it has some of these other elements of love in it. Probably the best biblical example we have of someone who operated in Eros love is a very famous story found in 2 Samuel 11, which is David and Bathsheba. Here's David, who's already got several wives, and he's not at war where he's supposed to be, so he's bored and he's listless and he's wandering on his roof, which happens to be the highest roof of any of the other roofs, and everybody bathed on their roof, so he happened to look over and see beautiful Bathsheba, who was bathing on her rooftop. She wasn't doing something out of the ordinary to seduce him. She was just having a bath. And he looks and he lusts and he feels, I need to have her, like we feel when we are in Eros. And then he asks about her and finds out she's married. And he still goes over that to get what he wants. I guarantee when we get to heaven and can talk to David, he will say that that is the worst decision he made in his life. Because that's what happens when we act on Eros love. So don't act on it when it leads you astray. And then the bottom line is this: don't let it run your life. We are more than glands and hormones. God has made us to be human. I mean, it sounds simple to say, but don't be a dog. Be a human. Because when you are run by these other things, you're not letting the best part of you run your life. We can rise above that because God has given us this love, this agape love, the love that Paul talks about. And when you have agape love under Eros love, then you can enjoy it for the incredible joy it is. I mean, honestly, when I met my husband, I was 48 years old, and I can still remember the second time I saw him, I was walking towards him, and I felt like I was in junior high. Eros is incredible. It's a gift from God. It's not something to be scared about. It's just something to harness in your life. And that's why God gives us agape love. We're more than our emotions, too. We're not just more than our glands and hormones, but we're more than our feelings. And believe me, as a 4 on the Enneagram, that's saying a lot to me, because if you talk to my husband, he's going to say, she's a lot of feelings. And some of you are too. But we're more than that. And we can't let those things run us when we have this deeper sense. And maybe the biggest thing that I can say about Eros love is that we have this privilege of loving people with agape love, because it's our love that shows people God. I want to give you a last verse. It says this. It's 1 John 4:11. No one has ever seen God, because he's invisible. But if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. So we have this opportunity to witness to others about our faith through our love. Some of you have seen relationships in this church, marriages, maybe people who are older that you think, oh my gosh, that relationship is such a testimony. It's a testimony to God when you stay together because you have brought something else into your relationship that keeps you together. It's this agape love that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13. It's a love that is patient. It is a love that's not self-seeking. It's a love that perseveres, even when it's hard. And it's a love, ultimately, that never fails. Eros is going to fail you. You can enjoy it while it lasts. Sing about it. Dance through it. Enjoy it. But don't let it run your life. Let agape love be the thing that others see in you and actually see God in you and in your relationships. Let me pray. Lord, I know that there's probably a lot of stories right now that people are thinking about. Maybe even some regrets and some remorse over behaviors that we've all done, things that we regret, ways we've acted, maybe in relationships, people we've hurt, people who have hurt us. Lord, I thank you that you always give us the power of a new start. And I want to pray right now for anyone who needs that new start to say, you know what, that's kind of how I've been running my relationships, but I don't want to do that anymore. I want to make a new decision. And Lord, we also know that a lot of times it's impossible for us to love that way unless we're accessing the love that you have given us. I thank you that you, as much as you delight in us, you don't love us because you're in love with us. You just love us. It's a commitment you've made. And with that same spirit, we want to have that kind of love in our relationships. And so I pray for my brothers and sisters and myself that if we're married, that we would take a new look at our marriage and renew that sense of why we're here. And if not, that we would do our relationships differently as we wait for your timing and your way of bringing someone into our life. But help us look for the right things. Even as we enjoy eros, Lord, help us do agape. And we need you to do it. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.